Mrs. S. Davidson, Reel 4.
Were there ever any unmarried English women out there, perhaps visiting?
No. No. For the British troops, of course, the army well looked after the troops, you see. And for the single troops out there, there was women, well, we called them down homeless, but there was women kept for the use of the troops, you see.
English women or Asian
no,
women?
No, well, they were not English. They might, could have been somewhat settled out there. As I said, some of the soldiers would marry out there, not bring their wives home. They would have their families out there, yes. But there was, the troops was well looked after in that respect.
Now, I know you enjoyed it there, at least most of the time, but surely there must have been some women who really couldn't adjust.
They couldn't, and they were heartbroken the whole time they was out there. And really, they made themselves ill because they just couldn't get used to it. Well, the thing is, when I got to Bombay and I looked up the next morning, I thought, this wonderful, beautiful sunshine, and as the years went by, I loved it so much. I made up my mind I was going to. You've either got to like it, and if you don't take to it, you're never going to like it. But now I'm home, you know, I look back over those days, and there's something about India different to any part of the world. I've been to a good few countries, but India is outstanding. The spices, the smells, it seems to get into your blood. The beautiful sunshine, and it's a dry heat. The gaiety, the poverty, everything, it's so different to any other part of the world. There's something about India, it's a wonderful country. And but as I say, if they didn't like it, they couldn't get used to it, they just made themselves ill. And then, of course, another exciting thing out there was the Indian weddings. When they had a wedding, they feasted for days on end. Feasts and just for days on end. And I said to my bearer once, I said, "Bearer, what a fuss they make over that wedding." He said, "Ah, Mam Sab, sometimes when they marry, they get into so much debt, they're not out of debt all their life. But that must be for their wedding, you see. Their wedding must be a big concern." And while we was out there, one of my bearer's children got married, quite a young girl. And he said to me, "Mam Sab, he wanted time off for the wedding." And he brought his children along for me to see. Beautiful children. Absolutely. They were the most loveliest children I'd ever seen. Huge eyes, lovely hair, beautiful features, and so well behaved. And this little girl, what was going to be married, well, she didn't look 11 years of age, but he said he'd made a big bargain with her husband-to-be, with her husband-to-be's people. And then when the marriage was on, I've got some photos of it, I'll show you. And when, of course, I went for curiosity more than anything, and apparently they have this big wedding, and then they get married, and her husband was much older than her, quite an old man compared to her. Well, they get married, and then after the wedding, she keeps with her people, and he goes away, what they call the other side of the jungle. And then when she becomes of age, she comes into womanhood, they send for him, and then they have a real wedding, and of course, after that, they live together. But before that, they don't have anything to do with one another. And of course, their weddings to them is the most wonderful thing. They borrow, they get into debt, they do all sorts of things. They must have this big feast, what goes on for days and days. And he says, some never get out of debt, but why bother? They had their wedding, and that's just how carefree they are. You see.
What did you and the other families do about British holidays and traditions?
Well, you see, the thing is, when a soldier goes abroad in those days, he had to do 6 years tour overseas. The thing is to get them acclimatised, because in those days we had our dominions, and then if war broke out in any of the dominions, they were acclimatised. And so they had 6 years overseas, and then you came home for 6 months' holiday. Well, during the very hot weather, if you wished to, you could go up to what they called the hill station. And like from Madras, you would go up to Bangalore, and I think at Mo, It was Wellington, but the Secunderbed, it was more... It wasn't such a hot country, not so hot, you know. You kept on the plains. And so for 3 months, the women would go up to the hill station, if you wished to. And the first year I was out there, I thought, well, I don't feel like going up and taking my children, leaving my husband behind on the plains. And they asked again, so I said to my husband, do you think I can? So he says, well, of course you can. Why not? So I said, all right, I won't go. I should be now happy perhaps up the hill station, you see. And so we stayed on the plains. And funny enough, my children kept so healthy the whole time I was out there. Of course, it's a beautiful dry heat. And they didn't have dysentery, they didn't have malaria. Well, my son did have a slight touch of malaria 1 year, but very, very slight. And we didn't get dysentery, and they kept so well and so healthy that I never did go up the hill station. Nor the children, we kept on the plains the whole time.
Were you the only family like
yes,
that?
Yes, at that time we was the only English family what kept behind. All the others went up to the hill station. But, of course, that's up the hill station is more supposed to be more like an English climate. Well, then, you see, we had what was called the monsoons. Because the beauty of England, of India, you could know for 9 solid months you wouldn't see a speck in the sky. Beautiful blue hot sunshine and blue skies. Then when the monsoon started, it wasn't cold. It was more clammy, but it was never cold. And they lasted for 3 months. Well then, if say the monsoon broke, what they call the monsoon break, say it was 5 o'clock in the evening, you could more or less look forward to rain at that time every day. And in between, of course. And it simply fell down. Where the earth is all parched and dry, within a matter of hours, as the saying is, everything was lovely and green, and you could see the poor old herds of buffalo enjoying the green grass, and that was absolutely nice for them. And of course, then you got terrific thunderstorms. And that's one thing an English person has to get used to, the climate, because you get terrific thunderstorms. And even in the monsoon weather, and even in the summertime, it's so hot at day, in the daytime, that in the evening, when the sun is set, the light and the sheet light is so vivid, you can almost read a book by it. Sit on the veranda and read a book. It's sheet light, you see. But the storms are a bit frightening when you first get out there. And when we were in Madras, we had a very big typhoon there. And I know we had to shut up in our quarters. We was right up high in the quarters there, because supposed to get the sea breezes. And we hadn't opened the shutters for 3 days. I was a bit nervous then. And then when we was at Mo, we had a bit of an earthquake shot. There was a big earthquake somewhere. I don't think it could have been the Quetta earthquake, which was about that time, because I'd been too far away. But anyway, at Mo we had the shock of an earthquake shock. And that was the rather nasty experience, because the Aya, she snatched her children up, and Bera came running to me, and he pulled me out of my musket, pulled me out of bed, said, "Ma'am, said, run quick, out in the open," you see. And of course we experienced earthquake shock. It didn't last too long, but it's something, you can know why it's called a shock, because it's something you can't describe. It's terrifying. And the cookhouse, we had some big cracks in our quarters, but the cookhouses were down. Most of the cookhouses were down, and the native huts were down. The pots and pans were off the wall. And this happened very early in the morning. And then after that, poor old dogs and animals were sick and bad, and the troops didn't go on parade that day. Then after that, I said to my husband, "I don't know," I said, I haven't seen my mother such a long time. "I think when the troop in season come round, shall we go home?" So he said, "All right." And of course, the trooping season's twice a year. So that when you come from the monsoon weather, you get to the summer here, and then you don't feel the big difference in the weather, you see. But anyway, by the time the trooping season came around, I'd got all over the earthquake. I didn't want to come home. I just loved it out there.
What did you do about Christmas?
Oh, Christmas. It seemed funny to have Christmas in the hot sunshine, but Christmas they gave us a wonderful time, the regiment did. They had huge parties for the troops, for the children, and also the troops were entertained, and we had the most marvellous Christmas. In fact, I have some of the photos that I think I showed you where we had our Christmas parties. Oh, yes, Christmas was... Well, it didn't seem like Christmas not to see any snow, but it was absolutely a wonderful time. Yes, the children thoroughly enjoyed. They had parties and fancy dresses. Balls and plenty of dancers and that for the troops and that, so really there was nothing to feel homesick about.
What did you do about presents for the children? Did you send away to England for things?
Well, my sister was very kind. She always sent them out things. I know he wanted a little cowboy set, and she sent him a cowboy set. And on one year, she sent him an Easter egg. And of course, when he got the Easter egg, there was nothing in the box at all. It was all melted away. And then our mail, we used to look forward to the mail from home, because you're out there for 1 month, and then you get your first mail, which you get regularly, a month old, but you get it regularly every week after that. And we used to so look forward to the English mail. I remember one woman out, an English woman, it was getting near their time to come home to England. And apparently she must have wrote home and said she wanted some English shoes for one of her little children. Because when they sent the newspaper, they'd sent this little shoe inside it. And when the postman came, he said, "Ma'am Sabby says, please come. Something smuggled in the newspaper, you see." Well, of course, she knew what it was. And so she looked out and she says, "Well, what is it?" So she said, "I know, you know, Ma'am Sab." So she said, "Well, that's a little shoe." She said, "They send you shoes for luck." So he says, "Oh, Ma'am Sab." So he says, "But you get into trouble." She said, "I don't want it, you take it." He said, "No, Ma'am Sab, no good to me." She took it. The next week, the other shoe came in the paper, so she had a pair to come home, for the child to come home in. Yes, and it was quite exciting. It was usually on a Friday, and of course the troops were all being lined up waiting for the mail to come from home, especially the single troops. And we had one or two married men. I mustn't mention their names, but there was one person out there. And he wasn't one of our married families, but he was a married man. His wife wasn't out there. And, of course, he had this letter come, and he was so... Well, they was all excited to get the English mail. And he was reading this letter, and he kept going, goody, 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 goody. He kept saying to himself. So the other chaps kept hearing him say that. I said, "You got some good news, Ted?" He said, "I should think I have." And I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "Well, my wife has just given birth to a bouncing seven-pound baby boy." I said, "Isn't that good?" So I said to him, "Well, what's so good about that? You've been out here over 5 years." He said, "That's nothing." He said, "There were 7 years between our two first children." Oh, yes, but with the regiment, it was always full of army jokes. There's always a good laugh. Always. There was one person out there. We had some little chickens from the Indian Bazaar. And my husband and I took nice at the back, just to keep these little chickens, you see. And we had this person from England come out, and he was near our quarters, so he saw these little chickens, and so he said to my husband, "Did you bring them out from England with you?" He was so simple, he thought we'd brought them out from England. And the monsoon came on, and they got wet. So, he had some chickens as well then, when he saw our little chickens, and they got wet in the monsoon, so he put them in a basket thing, and he tied it on an electric fan and twisted it round to dry them. And of course, when they got in the basket, they was all walking about, you know, all dizzy. He was so simple, and they saw him one day out on the plains with a huge rope and his dog. And so they said to him, "What are you going to do with that rope?" He said, "Oh, I'm going to teach my dog the Indian rope trick." It's just so, you know, we had some good laughs. The white children never played with the native children. Occasionally the cook would bring one of his little children around, all dressed up smart. It could be a pair of Sab's shorts, but there was a little boy about 3 years old, that sort of thing, you know, but they put clothes on them. And if they come along with them, they would sit on the veranda and play with English children's ties while the daddy was in the cookhouse, but they never intermingled.
Did you share your cookhouse with other families?
No, everyone had their own cookhouse. And of course, you don't have no fireplaces at all in the quarters. And the fireplace in the cookhouse is a big open place, and they put these long pieces of wood in, and the oven there. It's amazing how they do the cooking, I just don't know. But if you had a chicken, because our cook boy was a Hindu, you see, they wouldn't wring its neck. He would get the knife and cut the head off on the edge of the sink. And you'd throw it on the floor, and the poor thing would flutter about with its head on for a few seconds, you know. But then, you see, that was their religion. That's the way they had to kill it, so.
How could you tell the difference between the different religions and different classes of Indians?
Oh, well, usually by their dress, too. I mean, And like the Parsis, they were what you call more of a wealthy nation. They always dress smart and beautiful jewels and beautiful saris and jewels and that. Where the Hindus, they would have their red round hat with a tassel on. Oh, you could tell the difference. And also in their features. The Parsi women were beautiful, beautiful features they had. And out there, the rough work, making roads and that, done by the women. The Ayahs do all the rough work and the men sort of do the cooking and that sort of thing.
Where did your servants live?
Well, down in the bazaars in their quarters. And they used to come along regularly in the morning.
But none of them spent the night in the army quarters?
Oh, yes. Like when we went out, you never left the children on their own. And when you went out in the evening, the ayah, she would unroll her dari. It's called a dari. It's like a rug. And she would lay it down, because as I said, the quartz are archways. She would lay it so she could see the baba, the two babas. She could see them both, you see. And she would sit on or lay on that dari, and no one would move until we came back. She was very, very faithful to the children. Oh, yes, they would stay the night, because she'd pay them a couple of pays or something for staying the night. They always so faithful. Whatever you asked them to do, they never refused.
Who took care of her children?
Well, I don't know, really. They're down in their native village, and there's so many of them. You see little tiny children running about with their little child on the hip, carrying little kiddies on their hips, you see. And some of them in such rags. There's so much poverty there. Terrible, the poverty. And yet I cannot understand nothing. Ever since I can remember, I've always said, even missionaries and church, and there's always aid for India. They've sent so much aid to India, but they are still as poor as ever they were. And yet there's so much wealth amongst the Nizams now. And as for building, why they can't build their own cities now, I don't know, because the temples they're building are outstanding. The work in them is absolutely magnificent. So why they can't stand on their own feet, I just don't know.
What was your husband doing?
Well, he was in the cookhouse. He was to do with rations all the time. He was in the cookhouse. Of course, there's times when the troops went up to St. Thomas's Mountain, what they called Red Hills and Birch, on long route marches. For times on end, I remember one occasion, they had to come back because the monsoons were so bad that they couldn't put up camp. They had to come back. But with all their equipment, they used to march miles and miles in that heat.
How long would he stay away?
Well, it just depends, and perhaps I was at work camp 10 days, 5 days, 3 days, just depends how long I was at work camp. But, of course, I had to do there. That was the idea of them being stationed overseas to get acclimatized. In Fort St. George, we had the most beautiful church, absolutely magnificent. And inside it was the most wonderful monuments of all the governors and viceroys and that. And I have been told, I saw a person that's been out to India that was out there just after we came home, and they've been out again in their occupation. They were sent out there, and they said that that beautiful church has been kept just as the British left it. They sort of made a monument of that to the British, but that was absolutely wonderful monument. And of course, in Fort St. George, we had the sea there, and then there was one to get with the moat all the way around the sea. So, and you'd see the huge buffaloes cooling themselves in the moat. Because the buffalo, they've got a skin the colour of an elephant, great big horns, you know. And I think what we called beef, I think we had beef, buffalo for beef, and I think our mutton was goat. It was tough, but we enjoyed it. And the fruit was at Fort St. George. We looked down from our quarters onto the fruit walnut yard, and that was like a shed place, a long shed place, where he kept his fruit, and he also lived there. And I won't say whether it's just before the sunset, because so many days and so many times a day they say their prayers to Allah. And you could see him a certain hour in the evening unroll his dari and kneel down and say his prayers. Then after that, you'd see all his family come and have their feast. A dairy was laid out, big pot of curry was in the centre, and huge piles of chapatis. Well, you'll call them flat pancakes over here. Huge piles of chapatis. and they would all sit round us and break the japanese and dip it in this big pot. You know, and you see, they used to only eat once a day, one meal a day they had. But everyone was there when they had their meal and their prayers beforehand.
After you'd been there a number of years, you would have been an old timer, and there would have been new people coming out from India, new wives.
Oh, yes.
And new soldiers. What sort of advice did you have for the newcomers who came
out? Well, actually speaking, we didn't have to give them advice because the army looked after all that. They were sure their quarters were there for them and the servants and everything to make them homely. And then the first night out there, you'd go up to the mess and get introduced to the different people and see. There was all one large happy family, the white people were out there. Because, as I say, they somewhat never would get used to, but myself, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Did you find that amongst the English families, people divided into groups?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, no one else, they had to be that way. You see, like the privates and sergeants and that, they weren't allowed to mix to that extent. The women were, but not the men, of course. Oh, yes, there was always, what you call, a little bit of snobbery attached to it.
Did that mean that you had to make sure that somebody whose husband had a higher rank than yours would take precedence over you at a social function?
Oh, no, not amongst the women, no. That rank only went amongst the men, not amongst the women, oh, no.
Did you have any contact with officers' wives?
Yes, we did. And Mrs. Russell, one of our officers, she used to give us invitations to... She used to arrange invitations for us to go, you know, visit in different parts and different sites and things. Oh, yes, the officers' wives and Mrs. Pereira, she was out there the time we was out there. She was very... In fact, the officers' wives were very, very nice indeed. They tried to make the families just feel homely. Well, he was a doughty man. Well, Chota Wong, a man, one of the Wongers. And every occasion, we hadn't been out there very long then, and the silk Wongers, these silk Wongers, would come around with their huge bundles of silk tied up and spread it out on your veranda, and you would buy their wares and that. But it was very unkind to some people, because they would thieve from them.
How could they do that?
Well, a person said to me, did you get anything when the silk Wongers come around? I said, what did you mean? They said, well, no, we've got this, we've got that, and they've got a beautiful silk scarf or something. I said, no. So they have a pair of wide leg knickers on, and of course you all squat out on the veranda, cross-legged on the veranda with all round his wares, and used to gradually, while he's holding up a beautiful silk table cover or something showing you, they would take something and tuck underneath that. But I think that's a thing I never did, and I never wished to do. And another thing too, when they were going home, you would find there would be people wouldn't pay their bills. We had an army contractor called Chabadeen, and he moved with the regiment. And from him, you could buy certain kinds of English foods. And of course, you paid once a month. And if they were going home, you see, some people wouldn't pay their bills. And when we came away, we had a wonderful surprise down when we got to the station, because Chabadeen had sent us a huge basket of beautiful fruit and drinks to have on our train down. Of course, we'd been good man out there, and the children had been so good. So, I mean, that's the way you should leave the country. I mean, I found with the natives out there, if you treated them as human beings, they respected you very highly. They certainly did, and there isn't anything they wouldn't do for him, but because his son would treat them as slaves, more or less, you know. But we never did. We treated them as we were ourselves, and by doing that, I found we got on wonderfully well with them. And in fact, after we got home, I have them there, you can see them. The bearer sent us some beautiful letters, and he says, Mam Sab, tell Sab, come back to India quick. I'll be waiting for you. Which is so lovely. I've kept those letters and that sort of thing.
Was the silk waller fooled by those women, Or was it just that he knew what they were doing but couldn't do anything about it?
No, I don't think it... No, they got such big bumps. No, I don't think that... I don't think he knew they were doing it. Oh, no, certainly not. No. But it's a pity to do that. And I've known, like, the troops... Some of the troops I'd come home, the big dancers at night, you see, and have it hire a rickshaw. And instead of paying the poor old rickshaw, a few annas to run them home, maybe they've had a bit too much to drink, I don't know, but you'd see them now dump the rickshaw and the poor old man's rickshaw in the moat, which I think it was not the way to treat them, because they were very faithful to us. And, but then you get that with everybody, don't you get that sort of thing?
Were any of the troops ever punished for mistreating natives?
Well, I suppose they were through the regiment if they were absent. If the regiment knew, oh yes, the regiment wouldn't allow that sort of thing to go on. No, they wouldn't allow that to go on. But on the whole, I think the troops very well behaved when they were out there. I think they all liked the British troops out there.
Of course, the army had its own sort of law and order and justice. What about between the Indians, amongst the Indians themselves?
Oh, what they call loose wallow, yes. That photo of that loose wallow. Well, of course, that's between the natives. I think he's some kind of thief, you see, and they set about him.
And what happened to him?
Well, evidently they'd killed him, because that was the photo taken after they'd killed him, you see. But because you get the loose wallows, but... Actually speaking, amongst the British people, we was in our forts and our barracks. You've got very few outsiders. That were the people, the natives in amongst us, was more or less servants and people that worked in the barracks and that sort of thing. You didn't get the outside from the villages and that coming into the forts and that.
What happened to the loose wallow? Was he left there in the
yes.
street?
Well, it wasn't in the street. That was going through one of the mango woods, like. It wasn't actually in the street. Oh, yes, you get the loose wallows and and you'll find them every now and again, there'd be a terrible flare-up amongst themselves down the villages, and that you'll get them also in the villages. Because the beauty of it was, I used to be given, taken on excursions. I used to like to go sightseeing as much as I possibly could, you see. And we had some people, I can't think of the woman's name now, but she was a very, very huge person. She'd married one of our British soldiers, and he'd been out there after he'd finished his service, he settled down out there. And we got very friendly with him. They was living down away from the barracks and took a walk under the sun. And many a time I used to go on some nice sightseeing tours with him, which was quite an eye-opener. You know, into the bazaars and the villages and see the sights. But, of course, the thing is, everywhere you went was so dirty. The villages, not so much, the towns were bad enough, but the villages, all so much dust and dirt. If they swept the front of their, down the pavement where they display their wares, they'll get this here twig thing, they'll sweep all that and just push it one side. I never sort of collected it up.
Was that woman that you just mentioned, the one you were telling me about, who was left behind?
Oh, yes. What they call the troops down home, isn't there? It's one man out there, and he was coming home, and apparently he'd kidded one of those women up there that when he went home that she would come home to England, because when we got to Bombay, there she was with all her all this crowd of children all dressed up in sailor suits, and you never see such anything like in all your life, you see.
They were his children?
No, they weren't his children. No, she was what they called a down-home woman, and she thought she was coming back, because the native women, of course, they were only too thrilled if they could marry our British troops. But at the time we was out there, our troops weren't allowed to marry the native girls. If so, they weren't acknowledged as a soldier's wife. They got no maintenance of any sort for them. They certainly didn't do it. But they were very strict on our troops and our cleanliness and that. They had a PT room, you see, inside the gates, so that they had every attention if they were going out for the night sort of their business. Oh, yes, well, in fact, not only the troops, but the families was well looked after. When I've heard some of the stories and listened to the stories on radio, I thought, could it be possible? You know, those sort of things could happen.